Hello, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to The Naturalist Capitalist. I'm your host, Reed Coverdale. And today on the show, I've got a couple special guests. You probably know them. We got Jack Lloyd and Pho the Philosopher. How are you guys doing tonight?
Good. How you doing?
Super good. Yeah. Talk to your boy, Harrison.
I'm doing pretty great. Let's see. I first found out about you, Pho, back in like 2016, 2017. And it was this short video that I'm sure a lot of the people watching have seen where you say, what makes a transaction? I forget. Why don't you recite it? Because I'm going to screw it up. But or maybe.
Okay, well, I'll screw it up. Okay, so what makes a transaction not theft? What makes sex not rape, or vice versa, one of those orders? And what makes taxation not theft? Imagination. And it's like the SpongeBob, which I saw growing up, and he's like, imagination. Yeah. So basically, taxation is theft. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that was where I first found out about you. And, you know, just it's the little clips like that that really leave an impact. I don't know if you guys have seen mine. It's the bump firing an M1 Garand. It's all over the internet everywhere, but that's what people know me for. And it, you know, it's funny. Like if you put a lot of work into a long video, some people might watch it, but it's really just like, if you can make a 20-second clip that really sticks with people, that's what can really change their mindset or make them remember something or get a point across. Have you guys noticed that too? Or,
oh yeah. I mean, in Definitely. Terms of just like viral stuff, like the people's attention spans are increasingly or decreasingly good. They're going down. So if you can get someone's attention,
increasingly shortening.
Yeah. Decreasing in length and girth. So basically you got to get people's attention like that. And then, you know, once
you got to bring them in and then Tom Woods will teach them the facts. They'll be like, look at my charts. Look at the chart in this state. I don't know why Tom Wynn sounds like Alex Jones. That's what's going to happen. But yeah, no, I definitely think so. I mean, most people are busy and they don't have much time. And already their defenses are up because they're in this worldview and this kind of paradigm of whatever statism or whatever. So, you know, you got to break down their defenses initially. And humor is a good way to do that. Or humanizing yourself in some other way. You know, humor is a way to humanize yourself, you know, technically. Or making beautiful art or making music or doing a podcast, but you're really cool and you're really nice to talk to and listen to and people like hearing you. You know, that actually are ways to help people come to hear you and then become more open-minded because now their defenses are lowered because they like something about you. They connect with you on some other way besides, hey, I'm a libertarian and you need to know that taxation is theft. And you agree yet? Like, you know, like, you know what I mean? Like if that's like the whole focus, it's really hard for someone to first of all, see you as a human and connect with you, and they're just going to be pretty defensive there.
Yeah, libertarians. I like to say we're fiscally conservative and socially awkward. We're not really that good at relating to people outside.
For yourself,
of
our world. Reed. Okay. Your collectivist language. I am not socially awkward in any way.
Yeah, it's kind of ironic, but libertarians are like the easiest group to collectivize ever. That's what I've found, at least. Like, they're the most similar people out of any. I mean, you know, maybe that's not completely true, but yeah, it's very easy.
There has been a rise.
Libertarians have autism. I'm like, hey, speak for yourself. And then I'm like acting in this way.
Like the rise in libertarianism coincided with the rise in autism. Coincidence?
Probably not.
That's so funny.
I was wondering, what is your origin story for both of you guys? It's very rare that someone is a libertarian their whole lives. So I have no idea about either of you. But Pho, why don't you go first? Okay. What's your background? Were you a massive statist like Carrie Wedler or me or like all these other people who end up like throwing it aside, or were you always sort of questioning things?
No, dude. No. So, like, I would say I was similar to, like, Harry, like, West Coast chill vibes, but also, but also, you know, going through the public school system, becoming, like, you know, you're lefty. I think I would have been an SJW if I didn't find philosophy. Like, I would have been like, hey, I'm triggered. Watch your language, you know, and because... So for me, the way my origin story, so no, I wasn't a libertarian. I was like indoctrinated. I bring up public school in that way. And I share a lot of similarities with Carrie in that way, because we like we both liked Obama, and we liked we thought welfare was OK, or I thought welfare was OK, and just thought you just have to monitor people and make sure that they're looking for a job, and that, you know, like I was more like independent. That's what I would say. But I thought Obama was cool and he was really good at speaking. Also, he's like kind of hip, and he talked to some rappers that I liked on television. So that's kind of where my mindset was. I was pretty like, okay, I got to be a doctor. I need to be a doctor, status, good grades, A plus. You know, all that, like that was my modus operandi for a long time. And the way that I became an anarchist or a voluntarist or a libertarian was through Stefan Molyneux. So I always bring up Stefan Molyneux in my interviews of how I became an ANCAP. And that was how it was, first through listening to his show and from a perspective of self-knowledge and trying to analyze my childhood and my history and come to understand myself and why I feel the way I do, think the way I do, have the habits that I had at the time, and to really try to change for the better. And from listening to his shows, he talked about voluntarism. And eventually, once I connected with how I and remembered the times my consent was violated growing up, or the times that my property rights weren't respected, I immediately became an anarchist and thought, okay, so that's what an anarchist is by definition. I just don't want to initiate violence against others, and I respect consent. I respect every individual human being's consent over their body and their property. I was like, okay, I'm an anarchist. So that's kind of where I became one. It was interestingly just first from a bit of me trying to be healthier and you know, have self-knowledge. So that's how I came to love philosophy and, you know, just as part of connecting with those moral principles, became an anarchist. So, yeah.
What about you, Jack?
Well, me, yeah, a little bit different, because I came more from the neocon, you know, Republican side. Yeah,
yeah. More conservative couple.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, of course, that's definitely not the same anymore, at least they thank the Gantz. But from my perspective, you know, I had the mentality of like giving lip service to freedom and those concepts, but like being, you know, really excited about war and, you know, government intervention abroad and things like that. So I definitely had a lot to kind of explore intellectually. And I'd say that like kind of the big triggering points for me were in college, where I was just studying about the American eugenics movement. And I hadn't heard about that before. And so in learning about some of the events that took place, you know, for example, just the Carrie Buck being forcibly sterilized at the order of Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes, that kind of, you know, stuck for me and made me think, wow, okay, they were forcibly sterilizing people in the United States, like 60,000-70,000 plus people, even up until like the 70s in Virginia. I'm like, what else don't I know? You know, if I don't know that. So that kind of led me down the rabbit hole of really re-looking at everything I knew, looking up everything I could in American history. Alex Jones stuff, of course. That's yeah, you know, he had some good stuff back then. And just kind of, you know, revisiting everything I thought I knew, because just it was so shocking, the idea that, wait, what, you know, this happened in America and I didn't know that, you know, the eugenics movement started here. So you know, years went on as I kept researching, you know, started to like look into more resources on libertarian topics and talk to people. And then eventually made my way down to the No State Project by Mark Stevens. His website had like this thing saying, should goods and services be provided at the barrel of a gun? And I thought, well, okay, I mean, ethically, no, right? That, you know, obviously think services and goods should be you know, paid for voluntarily. So that kind of took me over the edge. And then I basically became a voluntarist around, you know, 2010, and had just, you know, basically been doing stuff for Liberty ever since.
That's a long time.
Yeah. I mean, before that, I was like a big libertarian and, you know, moved down the ratchet. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So are you guys into political involvement, or do you think that it's a waste of time and you should just spend the time messaging? Like, what do you guys think about the Libertarian Party? Is it a joke, or what's your take on that?
We have like slightly different, similar opinions, but slightly different.
I guess I'll find out. Let's see if anything's changed. Yeah, I don't know. No, you go first.
You go first. Okay. Yeah. I'll go first. So for me, I mean, maybe it's my personality type. I don't know. I'm an ESTJ. I kind of like, I like politics. I don't know. I'm an extrovert. I like organizing people for common goals, you know, as an ESTJ likes. And, you know, I think that there is a place for it. I think the biggest place for it as libertarians, ACABs, voluntarists, is as philosophical figures, as people to change minds, just like Ron Paul, as a really good example. You know, his focus was on the philosophy and of getting people to understand this idea of individual liberty. Like, you can look at so many clips of Ron Paul that have so many likes on YouTube that people just love, because he's just encapsulating in, like, you know, a sentence or two, this idea of liberty, and gets you so passionate and riled up, like, yeah, you're right. I own my body, you know? And so I think definitely that I personally think, you know, there is a place for it if you can do it well. And it's easier said than done. You know, he had his own whole life. He was a doctor. He was a dad. He was a good, you know, a good husband for decades. You know, he had a life. He had a respectable life too, one that people would admire, you know, like seeing that he became a grandpa and stuff like that. And so it takes a long time to be an effective leader, an effective thought leader. And that's what I see the purpose of politics, as at least for libertarians, and our purpose with politics, because we're not statists. Like, our purpose with politics isn't to like gain power and take over the world, right, and dictate. It's actually to try and take over and change minds and try to secure liberty, right, and individual rights. So I think from that bent of changing minds, it can be very effective. It just takes a rare, unique person who has all their S together, you know, and their philosophy in check, can think quick on the spot, quick-witted, very knowledgeable. And it's a challenge. It's you know, so it, but I think it's effective for sure if you can do it right.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't think that we have like too much material disagreement. I think that I was gonna say, I was like, that's something strange. But yeah, because I'm a voluntarist first and foremost, so I don't really, you know, like political solutions generally. But that said, I am definitely not one who ignores the reality of what's going on, you know, with the state and with people's minds being changed. And I do recognize that many people will only listen to political things during election cycles. And there is a, you know, obviously a strong place for having people who are in politics to get out a principled message of liberty, like Ron Paul did, and some others. So, you know, there's some in that camp who just are very apolitical, and they see it as a, you know, total rejection. You know, we're going to live outside of it. For me, I am just like an all means person. So I think that it requires, that is, you know, moving toward liberty requires all levels of engagement, you know,
all ethical means.
Right. I mean, yeah, like definitely all ethical, although you could, some would argue, well, that being a politician is not ethical because, you know, you might get a salary or you're doing things that involve the force of the state. So I would say that,
it's a weird gray area because you're like compelled to be in the system. So,
I don't know. I mean, there's arguments for, I think, for both sides, right? Because people say, you know, Ron Paul, oh, well, yeah, he was a good person for liberty in terms of communication, but he still got a huge government salary for life.
He did.
So, you know, there's definitely critiques that could be made about that. But I'm not going to ignore the reality that using the political process to change minds that itself, I think, is very valuable. And there are many people, and I include myself in there, who are not going to go from day one, you know, being a Republican or Democrat or, you know, something else, and then day two, voluntarist anarchist. I think that that is a lot more rare for someone to move that quickly, especially someone who's very, you know, quote unquote, educated, like schooled, I should say, where they spent a lot of time building up a lot of defenses and psychological constructs they have to kind of break down. So in that realm, there's a number of people who I think they're only going to be reached at that crucial moment where they don't really care otherwise, but because it's a political hot season, you know, presidential year, they will listen to what's going on, just, you know, kind of just
like they'll watch the debates,
right?
They'll actually look at the news because they,
right,
something about somebody taking over the seat of power over your life, and especially now with the president being able, right, to like overwrite the legislative branch and issue executive orders,
right,
as if they're laws. Like, a lot of people pay attention now. Just every 4 years, they're like, oh shoot, who's being chosen,
right?
You know? And then they try to, you know, they ask their friends, they're like, who you like, you know, and they're, mm-hmm, like, Trump sucks.
Yeah.
Biden's great. If Biden gets in, things will be over. Like, just, yeah, the weirdest. Anyway.
Not everybody wakes up that quickly. Exactly. Yeah. Like, some people need decompression time.
Right. But the point is, mm-hmm, they're engaged. Like,
right,
they're looking at the hashtag Biden, hashtag Trump. So, hey, libertarians doing hashtag Biden, hashtag Trump may, mm-hmm, get, you know, some more attention at that time, or with all the shutdowns, you know.
Right. I'd say on that, piggybacking real quick on that, just the concept of like what the Mises Caucus is doing is something that that I expressly, without hesitation, support, yeah, because the idea of taking over the Libertarian Party, and I use that language very, you know, intentionally, in order to actually get them to have the best possible messaging, yeah, makes sense. You know, it's a private, right, organization. You know, they are political in terms of running candidates, but it, you know, it itself is actually a private organization that gets funds from people, and they have tons of different ways that they can use their various communication methods, email, mailing, you know, their social media, things like that. And whoever's at the helm of that can very readily reach millions of people because they're all tapped into different networks. So the idea of saying, oh yeah, like use that pre-existing structure, a private organization, to reach more people effectively, I think that's a great idea. So,
yeah. So as far as messaging and getting your particular messages out there, since I knew about you first, I wanted to ask about the philosopher. When did you start that? How did you get that going? What was the impetus behind it? Just give us the lowdown on it.
Yeah, well, so the start was I wanted to share what I was learning about self-knowledge and the importance of philosophy, of valuing truth over falsehood above all else, as like your core modus of being and focus, as being the way to change the world and heal the world and actually achieve a world where our rights are respected. You can go out and you're not afraid, and you can actually build and create things with other humans. So anyway, I really wanted to share those ideas. And I had conversations with Jack and was brainstorming different ideas, some funny names. But ultimately I landed with, okay, well, what do I love? I love pho. Pho reminds me of home. It reminds me of my mom, my grandma, my dad, my family, and just love and warmth, you know. So it's always near and dear to me, and I ate that all the time growing up. So I love pho, and I also love philosophy. Philosophy is what saved my life, in my opinion. It's, if I didn't discover philosophy, this idea that you should value truth over falsehood, and what is that? And what constitutes truth, and how do you distinguish? That really, you know, saved my life. It changed the course of my life for like completely 180. So those two things, that's how I came up with the name. And I was like, well, you know, I'll just say the philosopher. It's actually pronounced the same if you replace it with the word pho, because it's pronounced pho. And then, yeah, so that's how I chose it, the name. And that's why I started it. Because I just wanted to help change minds and hopefully get other people to value philosophy and live happier, better lives too.
So is Facebook your biggest platform? Is that where you have the most reach?
Not the most reach anymore. It's where I have the most likes and follows. I mean, I don't think I have the most reach. Like, sometimes my posts on Instagram go farther and I only have 3,000 followers. Mm-hmm. Like, I used to have 11,000, then it went way farther than Facebook at the time.
Facebook battles,
yeah. Yeah. And I have like, what, like it fluctuates, 90,000 likes, 100,000 followers. But you know, the posts definitely even go farther on somewhere where I just have a tiny percentage of
like YouTube following. Community, like mine,
community goes farther. It's 28,000 subscribers on YouTube. So it's quite incredible how much throttling there is on Facebook now. It's not the same as it was back in the days of the Taxation is Theft video, for example. Like, part of the reason it would not be able to go that viral,
not anymore. Yeah, because Facebook changed everything. Yeah.
So yeah.
Didn't you just have your Instagram account nuked recently?
Yeah, exactly. It was the one that was almost 11,000, and it was right before the elections, like right after the debates. I did post some pictures. Like, I posted a picture in front of the TV, and there was like Trump and Biden debating, and I just held up middle fingers. But I don't know. I don't know what it was, because that's part of the problem, is they just disable you without reason.
I mean, I hate how so many libertarians don't critique censorship, and they're always talking about how it's only going after nutwing, nut job right wingers. It's like, no, it really isn't. I mean, I've got lots of friends who have been removed without any reason, just like you said. I'm friends with a guy named Magnus Panvidia on Twitter. He had he's only been around like a few months, and he had 8,000 followers, and they just nuked him, didn't give him a reason why. And you know, it's not just happening to Alex Jones or Republicans, it's happening to people who have important things to say.
Well, Alex Jones has important things to say too.
Yeah. Well, I'm friends with, I'm good friends with Ryan Dawson, and he hates Alex Jones. So that's a little point of contention. But
well, it's fun because it's like, ever since like Alex Jones was removed, now everything that he says now comes true perfectly. So it's great.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what I say is, it's not so much that he's right, but it's like, even the crazy things he says, they're more correct than what the mainstream media is telling us. So it's just, yeah, it's insane. I agree. Jack, you have, did you start Libertarian Guys with Asian Wives, or is that something you just joined, or is
that? Yeah, I created that.
Okay.
I've created many things in my day.
Did you know that Jack is a libertarian guy with an Asian wife?
Yes, I definitely am. And actually, that was fun, because I was just doing it kind of like just a jokey thing at first, but then like there were so many libertarian guys with Asian wives who like came to the group, like, all right, we're just making this real. And now I have like literally like hundreds of like couples like hanging out in our group and stuff. And
yeah, that's why I didn't know if you created it, or if a bunch of you guys were just like, oh wow, look at how many of us, because I just found it out about it a couple of years
ago. Yeah. No.
That's so funny.
Yeah, no, I created that as kind of just like a semi-humorous thing, and then it no joke, it was just, oh, I'm like, oh, okay, this is an idea whose time has come finally. So there are so many libertarian guys Asian wise.
I mean, I'll look it's at truly the incredible. Memes and I'm like, oh my god.
Yeah.
Like, that's often my reaction.
Yeah. I love what Fire Hurlican says. Is this satire? Yeah. No, I love making fun of.
Is this satire? I love the letters.
So much of it has been just a pleasure for me to just expose how actually like racist and bigoted the woke people are.
Right.
Because the second that you don't align with them ideologically, then all of a sudden they're coming at you with the most bigoted ways you
can
attack you.
Their assumptions are really informative and telling about their worldview. Like, their assumption that I was a mail order bride, or that I'm submissive. I'm submissive.
He just wanted a submissive wife.
You can ask Jack. I'm not submissive.
Yeah, that's not the vibe you give off in your videos, that's for sure. So
with the AR, like, that's a shotgun move, but you know.
Yeah. No, it's just incredible just how much it exposes the, I guess you could say, projection of actual bigotry that a lot of these people have like deep in their psychology, because a lot of these people who came to the, you know, critical race theory things or modern woke SJWism, you know, within a matter of 4 years ago, were probably calling people slurs. I'm not going to say what they are here. Obviously, I want your channel to be up, but, you know, F word, you know, slurs. That's not, you know, that the fornicating under the king thing, you know, like they're calling each other R words.
Well,
and stuff
it's
like
so contradictory.
You know, they're just a couple years ago, these same people were doing that.
Stereotypes. You know? They're against talking about racial stereotypes, but in action, they make racial stereotypes.
Right.
You know, like they imply like, okay, whatever, all Asian people are the model minority or whatever. And they just like embody white oppression. Like all Asians, like, I don't know. Like they themselves are collectivizing and grouping people based off race and judging them based off of just purely their race.
Right.
It's so funny. I mean, not even just on a personal level in my life, but even seeing it happen at government levels, Joe Biden was bragging about how many Black and female and Asian or whatever, name your category of people that he was putting in to his cabinet. It had nothing to do with what their experience level was or what their policies were. It was just, hey, look at how diverse the people, their skin color and their genders.
It's not about those people's ideas.
No.
You know, it's not saying someone who you really respect philosophically supports you. You know what I mean? Like, oh, Tom Woods supports me. I mean, he doesn't, but I'm just saying.
If he did. Tom Woods has supported many, many a great late night treats.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, Denny's.
Yeah.
Okay. But, but yeah, yeah. So anyway.
Yeah.
I forgot what I was saying with that.
Just that basically, you know, the whole leftist woke crowd is literally a bunch of collectivist bigot. Yeah.
You were talking about Biden and whole, you know.
Yeah. But so you found an effective way to reveal that through humor, which is more effective than screaming at somebody or even more effective than sometimes writing out something thoughtful. Sometimes people
it's more fun.
Yeah.
I just had to say it's more fun.
It's more fun. Yeah. But I mean, it catches on more if it's fun. You know, I mean, so many, we were talking about it earlier. So few people think about anything. You need to catch their attention with a little clip. So if you can catch their attention with humor, sometimes that will drive the nail a lot deeper. I mean, George Carlin could change people's worldviews with a joke, you know, where they were sitting in front of someone who's very smart and speaking very eloquently. It could just go right over their heads. Have you found that to be an effective tool using humor? Or?
Definitely.
Definitely.
Yeah. You know, like, you know, just even you're an example too. You're like, oh, I remembered you from the beginning of that. And it just stuck with you that little bit. You may not remember the whole video end to end or all the points, but just that little bit, you know, so yeah.
Yeah. No, we've been making people laugh for years.
I mean, since I was a kid, I always try to make people laugh. So that's how long I've been trying to make people laugh.
Yeah.
That's true. That's a common theme.
I think it's something the liberty movement's kind of lacking too. I mean, I think humor really catches on because so many libertarians or anarchists are just so pompous and self-absorbed and self-righteous. I know I'm collectivizing again, but I really think like libertarians are people to collectivize. I mean, that stereotype exists for a reason, let's say. Do you think that's true? I mean, do you feel kind of unique that you with your niche that you guys are doing? Or?
I think maybe there's a bias there when you look on the internet, just like if you look on Twitter. You're like, oh, is everyone an SJW out there? But you go out, you know, you go to the store, you go to the gym, and you're like, oh, no. Most people aren't. Most people are just going about their lives, trying to have a family, whatever.
But libertarians.
Libertarians. Yeah. All right. I'll give it intermittence. So I would say libertarians. Yeah. Libertarianism is relatively a more modern phenomenon in terms of more widespread adoption. You know, going back even just 100, 200 or so more years, you get to like, you know, a handful of actual libertarians around the world in terms of actual philosophical libertarians. So for a lot of people who come to it, from what I've seen, they come to it either because they're like the ones who are coming up with something new. You know what I mean? They're like, they're the, you know, one of the, like the new kind of whatever venue of new Liberty things. If it's a new, you know, thought leader or podcaster or blog writer, whatever, you know, so they're like really into what they're doing in terms of that, you know, that you might say there might be a, an air of, I don't know if you want to say pompousness or arrogance or self, you know, self-centeredness with it. That's a possibility, but there too. And then a big part of people coming to Liberty also is like trauma. Right. Like a lot of people become libertarians because they had really like bad childhoods. Right. The government abused them.
Right.
They had bad relationships or things like that. Things that made them go, wow, I really value my consent being respected.
Yeah, exactly.
See what I mean? So there's that libertarianism still burgeoning in that way.
And out of those two, one's more outspoken. So that's what I mean by the bias. So thanks for the information.
Hey, you know, it's just a little bit of basketball. You just, you know, you dribble it, pass it, bam, done.
That's hilarious. Oh, by the way, I love your intro. But anyway, the bias.
Right. Because it's just the nature, I think, of what's a fundamentally intellectual movement that has a lot of newcomers to it. It's not something that's culturally normalized in terms of like people accept it. Like, oh, I was born to Christian parents. So they like just kind of like identify that way. You don't have people like at this point, although it's starting to change now. I was born with libertarian parents. So I guess I'm just a libertarian nominally. Like,
that's true. That will be interesting normie, to see.
Right. It will be. Parents. It's about to be. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
what I like about what you guys are saying is that it's not just about opposition to the state. You have actual philosophy that you try to give to people that encourages them to live, you know, to live a good life and take care of each other and take care of themselves. And that seems really important to me, because if you just live to oppose something, then it's kind of empty and you don't really have a strong message of hope for people. You know, I think Ron Paul, he obviously loved freedom more than he hated the government. And I'm stealing that from Carrie Wedler. She said that when she was on my show, but it's so true. Like, he was obviously passionate about freedom, not just hating the state. Cause you see so many libertarians who it's obvious they just hate the state. Mm-hmm. And then that's about the entirety of their
existence. That was me in the initial stages. I feel like there are stages, you know?
Yeah.
You're like so mad. Right.
Is that a feeling?
Okay. I think I've observed. I've witnessed myself and others. Like, in the beginning, you're pretty mad because you're like just figuring it out, right? And you're so appalled. But eventually it settles in, right? You're like, okay, what's new? Oh,
yeah.
Stealing more money. Same old story. What's next? What do I do? Do I have a family? Do I become a peaceful parent? Do I get involved in whatever? Do I start a podcast? That's common. Thing that libertarians like to do. See, now I'm collecting. That's a stereotype.
Either you make memes, you become a podcaster,
meme lord,
or you live to share someone else's memes and podcasts.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like you can, a lot of the times, you can hook somebody by hating something, right? And then, like you said, they have to graduate to loving something. But I mean, you are right that a lot of the people, the best way to hook them is say, hey, this is screwing you over. And then they finally realize that, and they're like, oh, you're so right. It is pretty rare that the hopeful message is what catches them in the beginning. It's more the negativity of the state's existence.
I mean, I don't know. You know, it just depends. Like, I've seen people who are really into self-help and healing, and they're not libertarian, they're not political, but they have this empathy and this focus on the individual, just because they and they become peaceful parents because they already connected with their childhood, but they're not expressly libertarian. So, you know, it like, that's someone that is you know, you could change their mind, basically. That's someone that you may not hear about or know about, because they're just living their life and they're just trying to heal. They're just trying to meditate. They're just trying to whatever, like, do better. But they're out there. So, you know, it just, they may not be so angry, you know, like, I'm just saying there's different, it's different. We just may not know, because we have a bias again on the internet, right? You're not going to see everyone commenting that there is to be. So, you know, certain types of people like to engage online and not everyone does. So you may not see everybody. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we all want to kind of put our experience onto everybody else. That's a human, that's a human thing that we tend to do. We tend to think, okay, this is how I got here. So everybody else will get there the same way. And then if they're not getting there the same way, or if you see other people reaching out in a way that you don't like, or that wouldn't resonate with you,
right,
the tendency is to stop them from doing that or something, which is really dumb. Because you're completely right that different people are going to react to different forms of messaging.
Exactly. There's probably people that would listen to you that would just like ignore a video if they saw my face, like just my face. It doesn't even.
Because you don't have a mustache like that. If you had a beautiful mustache like that, they would
stop. They're trying to do your mustache.
They would immediately stop.
You know, I'm not some man's man over here. So they might be like, who's this? You know, they might skip.
You're going to be Fu Manchu.
Oh, that would be there you go. That's a great name. That's right, a great off the point that you bring up.
He's now going to come out with this now. He's going to like, okay, I'm going to have another channel called The Naturalist Fu Manchu. And then he'll like, he's like, I'm going to capture the Asian market now.
That's funny.
But yeah, you said dead on. Different strokes and different folks.
I
think that's
a great point, though. I just, you know, it's all about the individual at the end of the day. And I think it's, I like focusing on philosophy because that's where everything else comes and falls. Like if you understand how to discern truth from falsehood, you can go into any discipline with that kind of mindset, you know, and like figure it out. Now you're like, have the joy of learning the truth and discovery about reality. And it's fun, you know, and you can apply that to anything. And I want people to live a good life, like enjoy your life. I don't know if there's a heaven or a hell. Like, I don't know if there's another life when we die. It's possible that when your eyes close, that's it. You're dead and your consciousness just ceases to be, right? Like, think about it. Like, it's so precious, this life that we have. And that's why I value things like these ideas of individualism, of, you know, focusing on consciousness and being aware, or empathy, nonviolent communication, peaceful parenting. Like, I just find life so beautiful, all the good parts of life and love. And when you're kind to each other and you help each other out, like, there are some beautiful things that exist in this world. And I just want people to focus on building those things. And I understand, like, you know, beauty is subjective. I'm just saying, like, you know, together we can build, you know, good things and have that be the focus instead of tearing each other down, trying to shame each other, call each other names and make someone feel all low energy and mad and, you know, shame and not building anything and destructive. You know, like, I want our fellow humans to be in a mode of creativity, of that kind of childlike wonder of loving this world. You know, like, you see all kids, right? Like, before they're indoctrinated by the public school system or their parents or religion or whatever, you know, and they're shamed, their curiosity is shamed out of them, or their desire to learn about something is shamed out of them. Like, oh, why are you learning about the digestive systems of dinosaurs? I always bring up that example because it'll stay with me with Ethan. But so like, what, you know, why do you focus on that? Like, that's not productive. You should focus on STEM. STEM's important for you. Like, you know, someone else just dictating your life. But there are kids, like, before all that happens, they're just like, whoa, what's this? Well, how does this work? What's that? What do I do if I do this? Or why? Why are you like that? Why do you think this way? And they're very inquisitive and they just love it. They just love learning about reality. And that's that kind of mindset that I never want a human to lose. And maybe it's because I've been through so much trauma and I know what it's like to have that, to be in a state of consciousness where I don't have any shame and I just like love the world. I just feel so happy. To, you know, modes where I've been depressed and I have so much trauma, you know, I don't want other humans to go through that. And I think the way to minimize those kinds of sad childhoods and then adulthoods and elderlyhoods is through philosophy and just this love of truth above all else. So, yeah,
I really like what you said there on a couple notes. one is that it's philosophy. It's the overall reason for life, or, you know, the search for truth, because you can try to change someone's mind on one issue. And a lot of people think that because of what a scary time we're living in with this authoritarian government, that if we can just change their minds on this one issue, that's great. And I don't really care about getting into their philosophy at all. I disagree, because you might get them on that one issue, but what if that one issue is like the lockdowns or something, and then the lockdowns go away? What have you really accomplished? You know, unless you've actually changed the way that they're thinking, unless you've changed what they're holding dear to their hearts, it doesn't really matter. And then the other thing you said is the search for truth, which I feel that the problem with this society is that there is no truth anymore. Nobody cares about being consistent. Nobody cares about actually finding out what is true. They just want to find out what's easy or comforting to them at any given time. I think that you're 100% right. That's what we've got to, I don't know if it's even getting back to it. I don't know if we were ever that way, but that's what we've got to encourage people to do, is try to find out what is real and then try to live out of that, because that's the only way we win ever. Otherwise, it's, you know, if it's just subjective battles here and there, you might win a battle, but you're never going to win the war because you're not changing the way they think.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me of like, you know, how do you persuade? Well, there's kind of like the three different ideas of, what is it, like logos, pathos, ethos. So like logic, so reason, logic, feelings, just emotions. And then the other one was ethics, right? Ethics, like morality or something.
It might be appeal to morality. I'm going to say,
yeah. It was like appeal to emotion, morality, or logic.
I just slipped my mind at that moment.
Ethos means custom. Anyway.
Yeah, I think it's attractive too. You know, I think people really latch on to Tom Woods because he uses emotion, but only in a logical way. You know, like I think it's a two-pronged thing. You need to have you need to grasp onto people's emotion, but then use reason to drive that emotion. Because if you're just emotional, or if you're just reasonable, then I don't know, you're gonna fall flat if you're just reasonable. And if you're just emotional, you have nothing centering your philosophy around anything. So who cares, you know?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Appealing to both sides of you know, human experience in terms of logic and emotion is really important, I think, for people to resonate on like a really deep overall level, like not just intellectually, but to feel happy and fulfilled in pursuing philosophy and maximizing consent.
So, yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I want to correct you. You looked up ethos.
Thanks. Ethos, yeah.
Ethos. It's so it's like appealing to one's own credibility.
Character, notability. Right. Yeah.
So saying like, oh, I'm like a grandpa, you should listen to me about my advice on relationships or something.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, just kind of like encapsulating all three, like not just being, oh, I only do debates and reason. And there's nothing wrong with that if you enjoy it. I'm just saying, like, it's just purely about this idea of persuasion, right? How do you make someone's mind? Well, do they think you're credible, right? Do you, when you talk to them, is it alienating to talk to you, or is it nice to talk to you, right? It's like partially your feeling. And then three, do you actually know how to think? Can you think critically? Do you propose ideas that aren't contradictory and have reason and evidence to back it up? You know, and those things, I think, make a really effective persuader. And if you're talking about libertarians and, you know, what you're trying to do, if we're trying to change minds, like that's something you can focus on as a libertarian. And all of that, of course, comes from just working on yourself. So this idea, back to the theme of we're talking about, like, really enjoy your life. Just, you know, you're a unique individual human being with your own experiences and childhood and sets of parents, and it's cool. And just let's try to focus on the awesome things and promote those and really build this not just hatred of tyranny and a culture of hating tyranny and coercion, but a culture of really loving liberty and loving voluntary trade, loving being giving, loving being compassionate, empathetic, and having that kind of society as well. And I think would be good.
Yeah. No, I completely agree with that. It's what I was saying earlier. If you don't have anything beyond the hatred, then it's going to be pretty empty. So you have to have something to inspire people beyond just being against something. Mm-hmm. And I think we're talking about the logic and emotion, pairing those together. There's a lot of temptation to ditch the logic and just go with emotion to try to appeal to more people and try to take a short-term gain over a long-term loss is what I would say it's doing. I think it's really important to keep yourself grounded in what actually logically makes sense. And it can be a short-term loss sometimes because you could probably get more people if you were just going for their emotions and telling them things that aren't true. But that's what the statists do, right? That's how they get their crowds rallied up. You know, that's what Trump did. That's what Obama did. That's what everybody does. So to be different, we have to really tell people the truth while trying to couple it with emotion. You agree? I'm assuming you agree, obviously, but
I mean, of course, but and partially it's just like, it's the statists do that because they don't care. They don't want it. They don't care about the truth. They want money. They want power. They want control. And, you know, most of them just think others shouldn't have it. They don't like that others have as much freedom as they do. And they want to clamp down on that because they want to control all the resources in this world. So it's just like, we just differ in mindsets. Like we want human, like we're talking about love and loving one another and like individualism and like analyzing your childhood and thinking it's cool to talk about stories about our shared histories as humans. But these people are in a whole nother mindset. They're like, no, how do I get more money? And like, who's these scum? Like, how do we get rid of half the world's population?
But they certainly use like emotional tactics to manipulate, right? Like, right. They, for example,
a lot
like
of
the
them
Democrats
understand,
right?
Human psychology.
Yeah, so, like for example, like the Democratic Party will appeal to people's wanting a sense of safety net and security and family, and so they use a lot of imagery to like kind of make it seem like, oh yeah, you're part of this big, you know, collectivist family and do things for the common good and, you know, helping out your fellow
join
person.
The Democrats, we'll take care of you, like you know, social. And then the Republicans, well, mainstream Republicans now are rhinos. They're just like, we'll protect you, we're gonna be strong, we're gonna be like the strongest people in the world, you know.
Or they'll sometimes appeal to traditional family values, you know. Republicans obviously like to point to those concepts, you know, two-parent household, you know, those kinds of things. But I think that libertarians could very easily use those same type of tactics in a more effective way. And I mean that to say like long-term effective growing philosophy and having stability in people's mindset changes by engaging culture with, you know, in every kind of element and every kind of manner possible, whether that's things like the Tuttle Twins. You know, obviously they're very successful at engaging young people and parents, you know, providing a market demand, which is, you know, having reading materials.
So successful. And then they just got fully funded and more for their,
for their pilot. Yeah. So they got, three episodes funded. So, you know, that's just one example among many, you know, where you have the message of liberty being delivered in a format that does appeal to emotions and other market needs, you know, kind of more general audience needs. And I think that continuing that kind of impact on culture in whatever way possible, music, movies, shorts, skits, comedy, art, comics, whatever it is, you know, getting that out there is very instrumental to building the culture of liberty and having it be something that's sustainable.
And I would say it's all needed. It includes academia.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I love the Mises Institute. I love that it's like, hey, you want, you know, rigor? You want theses? Like, on why? On, like, I don't know why, like, how defense would work in an anarcho-capitalist society. You want a whole, like, volume on that? Go to Mises Institute. And, you know, I just, part of the beauty and what we, like, what I love as a capitalist is just this idea of, like, specialization and it really truly values the individual there. It's just like, hey, individuals happening to choose what they like and enjoy the most and what they tend to be good at and like developing those skills. And so it's awesome that there's someone like Tom Woods or Bob Murphy out there, you know, or Murray Rothbard or Dave Smith. Like there's all different kinds of people and skills. And I couldn't say that any one of them necessarily like brings more value, you know. I think that
Tom Woods brings a lot of value though.
He does. I mean, you could talk about some objective metrics, like, you know, yeah, whatever.
Citations.
Who has more
publication. Yeah.
Yeah. But Facebook, I just friends. Mean like there's a market. As long as there's a market, right? I think it should exist. And you just go based off the market. If someone's funding Tom, then there's a market for Tom. Someone's funding, you know, Dave Smith. Or
sounds
us,
like you're gonna buy Tom Woods now. Like, there's yeah. a market for Tom. All right, we yeah. got an NFT of Tom Woods.
There you go.
Yeah,
like LPMC
gets you. Yeah, one yeah. free pool hangout a year.
Yeah, I bring this up a lot.
And your own ebook.
You know, something you mentioned, Reed, is like when you start doing these things, if there's somebody out there who just doesn't like your messaging or the way you do it, they're gonna. Not always, but some people will say, oh, you suck. You should stop doing yeah. this. Like, this is cringe, you know?
Yeah, you ever get that, Reed? You ever get, this is cringe?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I just, it's funny, though. It's usually from people with, like, 45 followers on Twitter and 20 subscribers on YouTube. Right. It's like, okay, well, it's like you said, it's the, is there a market for it? Like, you know, if there's a market for it and you're receiving customers, then you're probably... You know, you're probably doing something right and you can ignore the haters.
Right, right. Yeah.
But yeah, so, you know, just try it. Do what you like. And I just, that's more of like a word to like people who, because I get this question a lot. What can I do? I want to change minds. How do I help? How do I get active? And it's like, well, just think about it. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know you. Unless I know you, but if I don't, I know you. Right. If I don't know you, then I don't know your skills. I don't know your interests. Right. And that's more my general idea to people is just like, well, are you interested in this?
Right.
Would you enjoy doing this? Is this a passion of yours? And go from there. That should mm-hmm. be the focus is like your own, you know, self-enjoyment and satisfaction, like first and foremost, and that you ethically and philosophically agree.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. And speaking of having a market for something, I think you guys do very well. You got the Voluntarist Origins 5 right now, right? You're trying to do a fundraiser to keep that going. Do you want to just plug that? And
wow, sure.
Through like 7 campaigns.
The 7?
No.
Try 12. No.
No, I mean just
me and you. Oh, just me and you, yes.
But yeah, you, of course.
So basically the latest comic book issue I have out for Voluntarist, the comic series. And for those of you who don't know, who are watching, basically I run a comic book series that the universe uniquely sets as its ethical backdrop and underlying principles, the idea that the government's bad, right? Which it might sound like, is that something that's like weird or common or something like that? But when you look at most mainstream comic books, even most independents and their, you know, TV or Amazon, Netflix, movie adaptations, they're so ridiculously statist and Malthusian. And I was even just reminded that just recently rereading Invincible, the comic book series, like just so much of the comic book world revolves around like worship of the state and that people should be ruled and that's a default norm and that's okay. And the CIA is good and they're always there to help you, right?
Right.
The adaptation of the Boys. True. So I really hated that, and it's what inspired me to be like, okay, you know what? Let's make a comic book universe where that's flipped around. And it still has, like, you know, a lot of your typical comic storybook writing in terms of, you know, it's focused on actual, like, characters and their character development, things like that. But it's just a whole different backdrop to the principles and the objectives, including in this case, you know, fighting the literal U.S. government who kidnaps the protagonist's parents. So it's something that I've really enjoyed doing for many years now, and you know, we've done very well with the past several campaigns, them all going above 100% funding. So hoping for the same thing on this campaign right now for Origins 5 on Indiegogo. So
cool. Is there anything else you guys want to talk about that's coming up soon that people should know about? I know recently Fu, you just went on the the Ron Paul Liberty Report. That was pretty cool. But yeah. You guys got anything you want to talk about that at all? Or do you guys have anything else coming up that you want to plug? Or
Sure. Well, that was fun. I love talking to Daniel. And I'll just say that. And I
watch
really...
it. Yeah, just go watch it. If you haven't seen it, just go watch it.
Dream
yeah.
come true, right? Ending up on the Ron Paul Liberty Report. That's like, I think that's the top. I've been on Part of the Problem, but I feel like the Liberty Report is like another step above that. And so
it felt really cool. It did feel very cool, yeah. I will say. And one day I'll meet Ron Paul, hopefully.
Yeah, but, same here. I would love to meet Ron Paul. So
yeah. So that was really cool and spontaneous. So that was nice to be on the show with Daniel and meet him, and didn't know that he loved the song Mask Order and sang it on the way to the gym. I'm like, I'm honored. Like, so cool.
It's very good. Go check it out, everybody.
He sang the song.
Yeah, Mask Order.
Yeah. And then they shared Tom Wood's house to the Ron Paul Liberty Report page on Instagram. Yeah,
that was fun shooting the Tom Wood's house music video.
Yeah, that was.
Oh yeah. Speaking of that, I got one super chat in here.
Oh yeah. Oh, Ludwig von Mises pieces. We just connected today. Hello, yeah. Tom Wood's house acapella.
Tom Wood's house.
Okay, you want to do the beginning? Because then you can whisper. Okay.
Oh sure.
Get down. Oh wait, oh, I'm sorry. Oh yeah. Yeah. Get down.
Tom Wood's house. Tom Wood's house. Get down. Tom Wood's house.
Getting down.
This is some Tom Wood's ASMR right now.
Up in the party. Yeah. Tom Wood's house. Everybody chilling. Ooh, okay.
It was a lot of fun. We were at his house and like we were under so much pressure to like get it done within a limited time because basically we were there and they just cleaned up.
Right.
And the house party was going to be like a certain time. So like, oh crap, we have to like shoot this. And it was tough to like get everything I wanted to do done. And I didn't do everything as exactly I wanted, but we made the most of it and just bam, you know, pounded it out, went to a bunch of different rooms, did drone video. It was crazy. And then like people are coming in to like, you know, like Pete Quinones.
Yeah.
He like came in and like, oh hi Pete, and he's like watching us like we're like putting a bunch of camera equipment together and he's like changing in the living room. Yeah, Pete's like, oh hey guys.
You just said he.
Yeah, Pete.
Oh, I thought you said he was changing in the living room.
Oh, if I did, it was a slip.
Oh, okay. That's what I heard too, and it was funny. Oh, so
my bad.
Yeah, I heard it too.
Whoops.
Don't tell everyone.
Yeah.
Don't tell everyone who just heard.
It's Falcoon.
Yeah. So there's like people coming in. There's like people came in to like, you know, set up for food stuff. We're just like trying to pound out this music video while we're doing it. We're like, okay, that works.
Okay, don't put pound out and video together. It was a music video.
Was a music video. Yes, indeed. We're gonna do another music video too, hopefully soon. We might do a campaign with it for the I Do Not Consent song, so that's something that we're thinking about for a summer project we have
events.com with Spike Cohen. We have an event with Spike,
right?
So we're gonna shoot guns with him, have a VIP.
Is that Tasha's husband, Spike?
So we're doing an event with him,
and Tasha's coming too,
and she's gonna be there too on July 17th. So we're flying him down for that at the gun range that we like to shoot at there for our events.
And hopefully the Muddied Waters podcast crew,
they are going to be there. Muddied Waters will be there too at the event. And then we'll be at the LPF con, so we're gonna be tabling there
in Lakeland.
In Lakeland, so we'll be doing that. I'm not sure if we're gonna do Y'all Revolution yet. We're still in the talks about that.
Thinking about Y'all.
We had been invited, but we got invited
to speak, but we're not sure.
Maybe. Well, more so because they didn't materialize the speaking stuff yet. And then we'll definitely be at Tom Wood's house.
Tom
Wood's 2000. Sorry, we were already at Tom Wood's house.
Tom Wood's house is probably kind of stuck in your head right now, right? It's just Tom Wood's
every
house.
Every Friday, actually.
Yeah.
It's like, it gives me Friday vibes, you know.
But yeah, we definitely
going to Tom Woods 2000.
Yeah, be so there. TomWoods2000.com.
TomWoods2000.com.
TomWoods2000.com. TomWoods2000.com.
Like, we're not getting paid. We just want to see I just want to see my Liberty friends at TomWoods2000. So go. Free Thought Project guy might go. Actually, I think he is going. Carrie Wood.
There's a lot of people going to Tom Woods 2000. It's going to be insane. It's going to be bigger than Freedom Fest and Pork Fest.
Michael Malice, combined. Dave Smith.
Yeah.
I think Bob Murphy's probably going.
Maybe. We don't know.
I don't know.
I got to check.
But yeah. Anyway,
there's gonna be a lot of people.
See you there, Reed. That'd be awesome.
Yeah,
yeah, I'll see if I'm going to Pork Fest and Freedom Fest. When is it? It's in
October 16th. It's a Saturday in October, middle October.
All right, I don't really have an excuse not to go. So
you should go. It's going to be probably the. I mean, actually, since you're going to Freedom Fest and Pork Fest, you'll be able to confirm or deny, hopefully confirm, that it was the biggest, craziest, most fun Liberty event of 2021.
Oh, that's exciting. You actually will be able to say and compare.
You can compare.
And I'll also probably be able to say I was the only guy that had him on for an episode with sunglasses on. So
that's true.
Yeah.
You should come in with those glasses. There you
go. I should. Yeah, that would be great.
I wish we were going to Freedom Fest, though. Unfortunately, so many people have asked us if we're going. Same thing with Pork Fest, which I heard got sold out. So congrats to them. That's awesome. I think that just shows how many people are tired of being locked in from last year. I'm just like, I'm coming out. Pennsylvania convention, LP convention coming out.
You know? Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see what you see, Reed, at the end of this year.
Yeah, we hope you have a lot of fun. We'll definitely like all your pictures if you post them.
We'll do. I've had you guys for over an hour, so I'll let you go. But thank you for coming on. It's cool to meet you guys after following you all this time and have you on my show. And keep up the good work. You're doing good stuff. So I'll just leave you guys the last word. Anything else you want to say, I have your, I got your Facebook, both your Twitters and your YouTube channel plugged in the description. Yeah. So if there's anything else you want to plug or anything else you want to say, we'll do that. And then I'll end the stream.
Yeah. Volcomic.com. VOLCOMIC.com. If you want to see the campaign, that'd be the cool thing.
Treesofliberty.org. If you want some shall not be infringed patches.
Cool. Yeah.
Oh, okay. FunEvents.com.
For the next event.
I thought you were going to do.
Yeah. Okay. It's like, your friends are wrong about the lockdown.com. No.
That's the different
show. That's TomWoods 2000.com. Yeah.
Yeah. So all those things.
Yeah.
Yeah. So hope to see you around or in person or both.
Probably in person.
Stay free. Yeah. Enjoy life. Make your friends. Grow your network.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
With some cool heavy equipment.
Yeah, for sure. That's all sure to happen. Well, thanks, guys.